I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
Glad to have you here today. Again, it's the week of November 24th. I want to welcome you to Political Breakfast. We're, of course, a product of WABE Atlanta. I'm Lisa Ram, political strategist Aaron Johnson and Brian Robinson are both here today. Happy Thanksgiving week to both of you.
Happy Thanksgiving week.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You know, it's a holiday week, but politics is not resting, is it? A lot going on this week. We have redistricting. We have a GOP poll regarding David Perdue and a possible run for U.S. Senate. And then, of course, the all-important Atlanta mayoral race. So we're going to try and cram all that in into the short time we have. So let's begin with the latest, and that's redistricting. The state legislature approving new lines that has Lucy McBath a little upset today.
Yeah, Lucy came out today and said she's going to move over into the 7th district. And from what I understand, we may have more people getting into that race, even though there is an incumbent there, Carolyn Berdow. And the fact is, the new 6th district where Lucy lives and her district, even though it's changed fairly dramatically from what she represents today, has gone from a pretty strong Democrat district. She won by 10 points last time, which is, you know, that's really good. To one, they're probably going to give a Republican a win in the high 50s if there's even a Democrat that runs in this district. And the important thing about it, and this is where the planning comes in, is it's built to be a Republican district not just in 2022, but in 2030, which is the last time these district lines will be in effect. So it is a long-term red district now because it's been pushed north up into Forsyth, which is solid red territory, and then into Dawson, which is even redder territory, though a smaller population. And it'll offset some of the mixed partisan voting patterns in East Cobb and in North Fulton, which have gotten more Democratic over the last few years. And this district still will get more Democratic over the next 10 years, but should remain Republican. So you got McBath going over to 7, which is now like a very blue district. And there's going to be a fight over there. And this is what I'm really going to be interested in is, you know, Berdow has run as the centrist Democrat that Biden ran as last year, except for this, in this case, Berdow has actually been a centrist Democrat. She's opposed some of these big spending bills. And that's going to be the wedge that McBath uses, that Berdow's not liberal enough and that I'm the real Democrat in this race.
She wasted no time, Theron, announcing her run today, saying that she refused to stand down. Smart move on her part?
Yes, and I think it was very interesting that it's not so much that she's running, but she's already getting ahead of the game as sort of being a fighter and sort of pointing out that this is sort of the things that you have to experience. You know, elections have consequences, and unfortunately, we still have a Republican-controlled legislature who can draw the map that Brian just described. But I think the thing that's really going to be interesting is that at a time where Carolyn Berdow, I think, received the endorsement or former Ambassador Andrew Young. So now her strategy of sort of being in a district that, quite frankly, a Democrat won, but she had to do it by appealing to independents and moderates. Now she's going to be involved in a very, very highly contested Democratic primary where she's going to have to activate primary voters along with, you know, expanding on that coalition that she's been able to build. But ultimately, look, it's unfortunate that Lucy McBath has to run in another district at a time where she's served a 6th congressional district honorably. But ultimately, I think that she and Carolyn Berdow are going to run a spirited campaign. And it'll be really interesting to see which Democrat he or she decides to run in the 6th district.
Speaking of highly contested, highly spirited races, David Perdue has yet to announce if he is running for governor. But then there's this GOP poll circulating saying that he might be in a pretty good place if he were to run against Governor Kemp. And Brian, the numbers are interesting.
Yeah, and obviously you got to think this is an inside job. This is somebody from the Purdue camp who's, you know, getting this out there. I saw it in the Washington Examiner, which is a, you know, D.C. publication that's got a conservative tilt to it. And I think this is, it falls in line with what we've seen happen in other races. If you poll this and just ask, who would you vote for, Kemp or Purdue? You know, Kemp has a lead. It's not a big lead. It's like 6 points, according to this poll, which people can say is of dubious origins. I don't know. But and then they ask, if you knew that Trump had endorsed Purdue, how would you vote? And then in that scenario, Purdue has a much bigger lead. And I have seen that in other races that in Georgia over the last year, that when you throw in the, well, Trump has endorsed so-and-so, that moves the numbers in some way. So it does fit that pattern. And as we've discussed here before, Kemp is taking this challenge very seriously. You look at how frenetically they've been pushing out endorsements of conservative leaders in the state. There was news this week that the Republican Governors Association was going to stick with Kemp and back him and put money into the race to help him in the primary. You see them pushing out anti-crime initiatives, and I'm sure that there's more to come. And it, you know, also news this week that there could be huge, perhaps the biggest ever economic development project in the history of the state coming very soon. The kind of thing that a governor who goes around touting that this is the number one state for business will use as a huge feather in his cap, just like Kia was for Purdue, like Caterpillar and Baxter were for Deal. This would be something even bigger than those.
Also interesting, though, with this poll is that Vernon Jones is mentioned, Democrat turned Republican Vernon Jones mentioned, picking up 16% of the vote in one poll and 11% in another, but still being mentioned. Is that an indication, Theorem, that he may be taken pretty seriously in this race?
Yes and no. If and when David Perdue gets in this race, I think it's going to be a two-person race. And unfortunately, Vernon Jones won't have a chance. But what's interesting about these polling numbers, Lisa, is that if that number that you just quoted are people who are interested in voting for Vernon Jones is very similar to what we saw in the mayor's race. That means that they're not happy with the current options that they've been presented with. So whether that's Governor Kemp or former U.S. Senator David Perdue, that means that it's a small portion of the Republican primary voters who actually want something different. And so while I do believe that if and when David Perdue gets in the race, Vernon Jones will probably either have to drop out or he won't, you know, make it the first place. But what he could do, which I think is highly unlikely, but to be fair to him, is that he could force it into a possible runoff. But again, I do think when David Perdue gets in the race, it'll be, you know, voters will have a choice between Governor Kemp and former Senator David Perdue.
Here we are a week later. Any indications on what Stacey Abrams might be doing? Are you hearing a hint, either of you or even David Perdue, when he might make it official?
In regards to Stacey, I'm not hearing a whole lot. I mean, I think I made it very clear that if we're on this podcast, Lisa, on December 1st, and we don't have a candidate for governor, I think Michael Thurman should be that viable alternative that a lot of people should start taking more seriously. And not to put him out there because Lord knows he would kill me because I know he loves this job in DeKalb County. But I do think that, you know, we got to have a viable, you know, candidate, he or she, if it's not him. And again, to basically be ready to go come, you know, January. So it's really unfortunate that our Democratic Party hasn't commented on this either. I mean, it's got to be Nikema Williams' number one priority is to find as a gubernatorial candidate. And I'm sure she's doing that, but we're all kind of in this holding pattern until Stacey Abrams decides what she wants to do.
What about you, Brian? You hearing anything either way?
Well, you know, in addition to Michael Thurman, and I'll say here on Political Breakfast, we asked Michael Thurman and we asked Attorney General candidate and current State Senator Jen Jordan if they would run for governor if Stacey doesn't, both really tried to get away from the question. Nobody wanted to answer it directly. So, I take that back. Jen did say she's running for AG no matter what, but we'll see if that's the case once there is this opening. Now, that said, I think on the Democrat side, and I can't speak to their primary electorate, but Thurman will certainly be a very strong candidate. I mean, he's got a huge Democratic base vote there in the county that he represents already that would give him a huge head start. And he's been around. I think people on any side of the political spectrum, he's built some respect from those groups, you know, around the state. So he would be a serious contender on day one. As far as Purdue goes, you know, there are a lot of things he has to figure out. And I can see why this is taking so long, because a lot of his supporters are people who are maxed out donors to Brian Kemp, people who have raised tens of thousands of dollars for Brian Kemp, people who are invested in him. And, you know, his campaign chairman was Alec Poinovic, who was appointed to the Ports Authority Board by Kemp. You've got his cousin, Sonny Perdue, who Kemp is pushing to be chancellor of the university system. So there's a lot of cross currents here. And, you know, one thing that is, I think, of national import here as we're looking at Perdue possibly getting in against Kemp is the ongoing power of the Trump endorsement, because he's endorsed on several levels in several different races here in Georgia. But it's not as automatic as it once was, it appears. It does seem to have diminished a little. It's still powerful. It still matters. It's still a net good. But candidates do matter at this juncture. I think you can see that play out in the Butch Miller-Burt Jones race, where Burt's been endorsed, but Butch is a hardworking, very good candidate. And you're going to see that in the Secretary of State's race as well. It's going to be a great test case on the enduring influence of the Trump endorsement. Is it decisive above all else? We don't know yet.
Days away, weeks away from the mayoral race. And we hopefully
not weeks.
Have an answer
no, not even weeks. It really is just days.
Did I?
It is just days.
Days away.
Yeah.
Days away. Absolutely. So when we come back, we're going to talk about the Atlanta mayoral race, Andre Dickens receiving that endorsement from Mayor Bottoms. How will that help him? We'll have more in a moment.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Support for WABE's local coverage on maternal health and mortality comes from Georgia Health Initiative, whose mission is to inspire and promote collective action that advances health equity for all Georgians. Learn more at GeorgiaHealthInitiative.org.
We want to welcome you back to Political Breakfast. And yeah, we're days away from the big Atlanta mayoral runoff race taking place real soon between Andre Dickens, Councilman Andre Dickens, and City Council President Felicia Moore. Andre Dickens receiving that endorsement, that long-awaited endorsement from Mayor Bottoms. I don't know. It wasn't a surprise, really, because I think all of us know the relationship between Bottoms and Felicia Moore. But how will that help Dickens? Any thoughts there, Theron? Begin with you.
Ultimately, I think it's a net positive for the Dickens campaign, because while there are voters who are concerned about crime and they definitely want someone, when the mayor is done, to come in and address that issue. And while some voters definitely complain the most about the crime issue and blame the mayor primarily for it, she's still very likable. And I think the majority of voters still very, you know, are very favorable of her. But, you know, look, now Andre will receive some of the criticism that Mayor Bottoms has received, because that's what happens when you take anyone's endorsement. So ultimately, I think it's really what Mayor Bottoms will do for Andre Dickens going forward in this campaign. How will she continue to campaign for him? Who will she target? Does it help him with some of the voters who voted for Kasim Reed, who maybe voted for her, but will more than likely or maybe not vote for Andre? So I think it's really, you know, is she going to send a signal to some of her donors to give him money? That's a lot of times what the endorsements helps. How will the campaign utilize her popularity with most people, but also strategically put her in some front of some of the voters that are still maybe undecided. But this also gives the Felicia Moore campaign an opportunity to say, look, guys, you know, look, voters of Atlanta, this is kind of more the same. This is not change, right? And she can highlight that now Dickens is a part of some of the things that, you know, she's criticized the mayor on. Now, what the Moore campaign has got to be very careful of, Lisa, is that we've seen the power of current mayors when they demand that bully pulpit. They have a wide reach. So the Moore campaign has got to be figuring out, okay, how do we address this endorsement, or maybe not address it at all? Because if Moore attacks Mayor Bottoms directly, and if Mayor Bottoms responds, we've seen how that worked out when Kasim Reed responded directly to then Caesar Mitchell, who was a candidate for mayor And a lot of people believe that it was Mayor Reed's attacks on Cesar Mitchell, which ultimately led him to not making a runoff. So I think it's, again, a net positive for the Dickens campaign, but ultimately Moore's campaign has got to figure out how they address it.
I don't know, Brian, what are you thinking in terms of momentum for the Dickens campaign?
And I think that's the word, Lisa, momentum. And from my anecdotal evidence file that I've collected over the last week since we were here last, and I hate pundits who use anecdotal evidence because I want to see data, but everywhere I go with influencers in Atlanta and the legal community and the business community and the grassroots community, everybody's sort of saying the same thing to me is Andre's the one who, if the election were held today, he would win. I keep hearing that phrase over and over again. And again, I would want to see data that proves that. It could just be their own little bubbles, but there does seem to be a lot of movement for him. Now, I don't know how much the Bottoms endorsement really matters. I agree with Theron completely that if I'm Felicia Moore, I'm going to attack and say, Atlantans won't change. They're sick of the status quo. They want somebody to break through the brokenness that we have now. And the person who's at the head of all of that is with my opponent. And if you won't change, I'm your candidate. And I think this gives Felicia that lane, that change lane, which is a powerful political place to be in this environment where people do hate the status quo. So I you know, if I'm Andre Dickens, I certainly take the endorsement, but I would imagine he's not going to be out there leading with it. He's not going to be talking about it a whole lot because I do think there's an undercurrent to it that's not good.
Well, I want to say this real quick, Lisa, if you don't mind. I think Andre Dickens has definitely done a good job of establishing his independence, though. I mean, if you look at what he's talked about the entire campaign, he says, look, we do have a crime crisis. We need a better future. He talks specifically about city services and how he would do things differently. Another thing that he talks a lot about is that, you know, I'll be a visible mayor. I'll show up. I'll respond. And I think that to Brian's point, the number one complaint you hear, particularly in Buckhead, is they kind of felt like Mayor Bottoms was not really that present in Buckhead as much as she could have been. And so I do think Brian is right. I mean, this does open up a door from the Moore campaign. You know, we haven't seen her sort of utilize this endorsement to attack Andre yet. But ultimately, I still believe it's a net positive because he not only has the current mayor's endorsement, he has former Mayor Cheryl Franklin's endorsement as well and Andy Young's endorsement. And so that coalition that we've talked about, at least on this show, 48 plus years in the city of Atlanta, it's kind of hard to break through because voters have shown time and time again that they support that coalition.
In terms of strategy, though, what do you think we'll see coming from both candidates in these next few days?
I think you're going to see the attacks. And so one of the indicators that I knew that Kasim Reed was on the verge of losing and wasn't making a runoff is that not only how he extended two stories to the NAACP letter story, he extended that. You know, we can't all forget the emotional testimonial from Mrs. Darden, who talked about, you know, her struggles with housing over in Peoplestown. But I think when he started to try to shift the attack from Felicia to Andre, that was a clear indicator that Andre was actually gaining momentum. I think you're going to see the Moore campaign in a more surgical, direct way start to really pile on the negative attacks on Andre because she's got to highlight those things. And I think Andre is going to start probably pushing back as well. And I think the one thing also, Lisa, that I'm looking for is who will have the most money on hand going into those final days. I hear both candidates are raising a lot of money. A lot of people are giving at big numbers, but I think the person who has the cash on hand edge will be able to have the best get out the vote strategy on election day.
Your thoughts, Brian? What are we going to see?
I totally agree that you're going to see them begin to draw really strong contrasts between the others and what Theron's talking about being attacks. And I guess what it's going to be, one thing I think is going to be an indicator about what's happening, what the campaigns are seeing internally is the messaging that we see over the next 7 days will tell us a lot. If one of the candidates goes negative and really turns up the volume on the negative attacks, you know that they're probably falling behind in the polls. If you see someone go from having a contrast with their opponent to being positive, you know that they are seeing really good numbers in their internal polling, and that they need to maintain those numbers. They don't want to depress turnout by going negative. And as long as that gap doesn't close, they'll stay positive going through the finish line. So that's just something to look for, to know what the campaigns are seeing internally.
Key is to get people to the polls. It's hard to do in a runoff election.
It was hard the first round, right? It was hard the first round.
Early voting is really low right now, Lisa.
Yeah.
I think as I checked this morning, Lisa, we're roughly at 15,000 people who have voted. And surprise, surprise, the number one voting district in Atlanta currently is District 8. And for our listeners, that is where a lot of Brian Robinson and his friends hang out in the rich part of Buckhead. My wife and I, we live in sort of the working class, middle
working
class portion
of
Buckhead.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, but District 11,
the low
which
seven figure homes. Yeah.
But in District 11 is number two, which is, Lisa, as you know, the Southwest Atlanta Cascade Road, where Mayor Bottoms live, where former Mayor Reed lives, and others. And so that district is a close second.
Well, and I you know, I don't go and look at early voting things. I should. But if what Theron is saying holds, right, if it stays to be a heavy Buckhead turnout and that is stronger than everywhere else, that is good news. That to me is how Felicia Moore wins. That is her pathway, that her base there in Buckhead, where she just really killed it in the first round. If that's what shows up again, and look, they're going to be the most attuned to the differences in the messaging that we saw here on this show, right? When we asked Felicia Moore, what is the number one thing? She went straight to crime. And Andre talks about crime too, but it's also a little more of a liberal approach to it in his rhetoric. And that nuance is something that voters in Buckhead are really going to pick up on. And would give Felicia, that is the way she wins. Because I think if there's a huge turnout, it looks like, to me, Andre would win.
Brian Robinson is a Republican strategist, communications consultant, and former deputy chief of staff for Governor Nathan Deal. Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist, public affairs and government consultant, and most recently a senior advisor to the Biden Georgia campaign. We're going to cut it a little short this week. It's a holiday week. Hope you all enjoy Thanksgiving. Next week, we're going to be live. We're going to be live the day after the mayoral runoff, so should have some interesting topics to share with you. So we want to thank you for joining us, and you guys have a great holiday.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Have a great Thanksgiving. Go Dogs. RecTech.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WAB politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WAB politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WAB.org or your favorite podcast platform.